This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So I was saying, I just really arrived myself. And so I can feel myself settling in to this space and noticing the differences, noticing my body. Yeah, I'm noticing a lot of beautiful changes and happenings in the community. And I really enjoyed our informal times together too. I really love these kind of almost like Dharma talks that happen around the breakfast table when we're all connecting and our hearts are open and we're just free and we're talking about ideas and funny stories. And one thing that was coming up at the breakfast table was this, I'm talking about doubt too, this concept of doubt and how important and confusing doubt can be in our practice. And not really talking about faith or kind of belief too much. But that seems to be a door for me to enter into this topic personally. And I was thinking how we have different kinds of belief. And where does belief reside? Where does it come from? What's its function? And I was thinking about how the more I understand something, I feel like the less belief I have about it. And so in a way, our Zen practice is really fueled by kind of like intimacy, being in direct contact with ourselves and our greater selves. So the more intimate I am with something, I find I have a lot less beliefs about it. I don't have any beliefs about my hand. I'm just fairly intimate with my hand. I know how it functions. Completely part of me. Yeah. And sometimes we have beliefs that are based on a lot of good information, a lot of good wisdom. But when we have a belief, we have to be careful because that belief can actually be kind of like an overlay, an extra piece on top of our experience that maybe we don't need. Why do we need to always add a layer on top of things? That's why it's really interesting when we were asked, well, what is Zen? You're asking me at the breakfast table, what is Zen? Wow, okay. You're already getting me in trouble. When I then asked, what is Zazen? What do we do? What is this practice of seated meditation? And it's really difficult to kind of talk about. But more to the point, I think it's dangerous to talk about sometimes. We can end up giving too many concepts when I'm trying to ask you to drop all your concepts. But here, how about some of mine? How about some of mine? What would it be like to just have a direct experience of something without that piece, without that overlay on top? Maybe that's all enlightened mind is. But also, I think belief, doubt still have a function in our practice. You have to be careful and examine those beliefs because sometimes when you look at them, you say, these aren't even my words. These are somebody else's beliefs. And I don't know where I picked them up along the way, but now I'm carrying them for some reason. Sometimes that's just culture. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it gets in the way. And even while I was writing this, I was feeling like, oh, these words are not enough. What I'm saying here is not enough. I need to spice it up with some more Buddhist quotes or pull something from antiquity so that you'll believe me. Bring in more concepts, some other people's concepts on top of my concept. There's really no reason not to trust my own song, my own wisdom sometimes. So, anyway, I found this a good story and a good quote. And found this somewhere in the Tripitaka, and it said, great doubt. Great awakening, small doubt, small awakening, no doubt, no awakening. And those of you who've practiced Zen for a while said, that sounds about right. Yeah, no doubt, no awakening. Sign me up. But yeah, we do sometimes need, a question or a doubt, we might need an energy like that to kind of push us forward in our practice. Because as we were talking about at the breakfast table, you can get caught in emptiness. You can rest in emptiness and can feel it's kind of nice. Then you need to go get some mint tea and chase that out, you know? What Kobun-sama said, he said, even enlightenment can be the most powerful Mara, you know? You can get caught there. So you need that energy. So you won't be deceived, even by yourself. You get caught anywhere. And sometimes that energy comes from you, and sometimes maybe your teacher even has to put it in there a little bit. Or maybe give you a koan or something and say, chew on that. Maybe that'll awaken what's needed here. And really, what the Tripitaka was talking about, it's not about the small doubts that we have in a kind of everyday sense. So, but really, we're talking about fundamental questions. And Dogen Zenji, a founder of Soto Zen in Japan, 13th century, 1300s, He had big burning questions that caused him to leave Japan and sail to China and take an inland pilgrimage and eventually find his teacher, Ruijin. He had big questions. He was thinking, he tells us in his writing later, he was thinking at the time that in the core of each of us, we have Buddha nature. At our root is Buddha nature, a beginningless, inherent, awakened nature within each of us. Okay, then why do we need to practice? If it's there, if it's inborn, what's this practice about? And if we are practicing with the idea of attaining something, aren't we missing it anyway? So again, don't put an overlay, don't put a piece on top. It doesn't need to be there. But Dogen, as we say, he arose the thought of enlightenment. This is what drove the practice on. So it's paradoxical that no one said Zen was going to make any sense. It's not what it says on the tin at all. So in fact, when Dogen returned from his pilgrimage in China, they asked him, what did you learn? And he said, eyes horizontal, nose vertical. The culmination of his quest that drove him from his home and put him on a boat and sent him on a dangerous voyage. It took up significant energy and resources. He comes back and he says, eyes horizontal, nose vertical. So, what would happen if you asked your kid or one of your students or niece or nephew, and you said, what do you think? You know, eyes horizontal, nose vertical means, they would say, like, I don't know. Do you want to go ride bikes? Let's go, let's go. And they say, yeah. When did we forget that song? When did we forget the joy of riding our bike down the hill and feet off the pedals and toes in the grass kind of life? An intimate, kind of awake, alive energy. And can doubt bring us closer to that? And also, how can faith or deep knowing be just like our intimacy? How do you do it? How do you, on one hand, deal with your fears and your doubts, the small doubts, the big doubts, and still stay intimate? So here's the story. This is case number 79 from the Book of Serenity. It's a collection of koans, a collection of teaching stories that have been handed down that the past masters thought are really powerful, illuminating stories that we can take into our practice. And in some traditions, we even meditate on them. So here's Sato's Book of Serenity, case 79. Changsha had a monk ask Master Hui, how was it when you had not seen Nanquan? Hui sat silently. The monk asked, what about after seeing him? Hui said, nothing special. The monk returned and told Changsha about this interaction. And Changsha said, Even though one is sitting on top of a 100-foot pole, he has not entered realization. It's not yet real. You must step forward or step off from the top of this 100-foot pole. The world of 10 directions is your entire body. The monk said, how should you take a step forward from the top of a 100-foot pole? Changsa said, mountains of Lang, water of Li. The monk said, I don't understand. Changsa said, four seas and five lakes are all under imperial reign. So yes, the main point of this koan, kind of the main spiritual point that we're supposed to tease out, is a little bit deeper and a little bit different. But man, there's certainly themes of doubt in there for me. That visual of standing atop a 100-foot pole, I just think about it's 100 feet, and I'm sure whatever I'm picturing, it's a little bit higher still and more, that much more precarious than I'm even picturing. And we all have those situations in our life where our fears and doubts become very loud. Or we notice they're making the decisions for us. I mean, because what step is not truly precarious in our lives? And this koan is saying, your whole being, throw it into this moment. Live it, breathe it, do it. Where's there any doubt? Where's the room for your doubt? That's the trick, really. You know, do you want to let go? Do you want to take that step into your life? Do you want to embrace it all? I love people come to me and sometimes say, you know, they want to talk about the difficulties in their life and, you know, oh, I have so much difficulty in my life and I have so much drama going on right now, this situation, that situation. And I just like, let me tell you a secret. You're the problem. if we said it that way, you know, maybe they wouldn't come back, but maybe they would. But like I like to say, you know, people say, oh, I can't, I'm stuck in traffic. But you are also traffic, right? You're also that. You're also in the middle of your life, in the middle of your problem. Whether it's your fault or somebody else's, there you are. Come on. You know, it doesn't, but that's what we do. So if I say, hey, it's you, you're the problem. What happens to you? What gets triggered? What comes up next? There's a place to enter into your practice. But really, what would it like? What would it be like beyond fault, beyond who's on the hook for it, whose responsibility it is? It's your problems, it's your life. Lean into it. Do it. Step off the pole. So, you know, we chant these four vows all the time, you know, about numberless beings, I vow to save them. And all these beings all the time. And it's my responsibility. I'm on the hook for it. I'm saying, I sign up. I'm going to do it. But doubt says, doubt says, all beings? How? All beings, I can't save myself. That's just you having a belief. It's just a story. It's the piece you're putting on top. You don't have a belief about your hand. Instead, have a direct experience. So I'll tell you a little story from my life. And I've told this story here before, I think. So if you know this one, don't spoil it for me, okay? So after the full moon ceremony in my old temple, we would have this monthly atonement ceremony, a lot of bowing and all this stuff. And so you're really kind of connecting with these vows that you've taken. This is like a monthly chant to renew those vows too. And so I was living in New York City at the time, and after this was all over, I'd like missed my train, and then the express train wasn't running, so I had to get on the local, and it was going to take forever. And of course, the air conditioning in the car is not working, and because it's one of the only trains, it's packed. And this is my life. Why is God doing this to me? It was like, this is what we do. But there I was, crammed in this train with everybody else. And there's this young couple, and there's a seated woman and a standing man, and they're talking and flirting away, and we're all kind of crammed in there, and life is happening. And he's talking to her, and then he notices that she has an inchworm stuck on her shirt, and this little worm is like crawling up her shirt. So he goes, "Ah, you got a bug," and she goes, "Ah, bug!" And there's this little like freak out moment of this tiny little cartoon worm, like, oh. So what does he do? He rescues her by taking the worm off her and then puts it on the wall of the subway car. And puts it on the train wall. And it's just like, what is wrong with you? We're like 300 feet underground. That worm is doomed. Like, what's wrong with you? This kind of idea appears in my head. I'm sitting there hanging out of the pole and just making my way uptown. And then this like 10-year-old girl squeezes through and picks up the worm. And brings it over to me and goes, "Aren't you some kind of monk?" And I was like, "Oh shit." This is my life. It's happening. It's unfolding right here for me. But yes, and then there you are with your hand out, like, I guess this is what's next. And she puts the worm in my hand. And it's motoring. And so it's making its way, and then I have to like switch hands, and I'm like trying to keep this worm, trying to just keep my life together, if I'm honest. Just trying to, right? But the problem is, I'm also going, 60 miles an hour, clattering around on the ground, so I also have to hold on. So I'm trying to do these maneuvers and not hit people and do all these things. And now I have the attention of most of the train, right? Between the girl and the guy, "Ah, bug!" Now, oh, this giant monk has a bug, right? And then this is going on like this. And it's getting difficult. And I'm about 30 stops from home. It's like, ah! It's like the Sisyphean kind of qualities to this life I have sometimes. And as I'm thinking about this, how do I do this? There's a woman standing behind me, and she grabs my backpack to brace me. Oh, okay. And I realized that the energy of the train was bolstering me and said, "No, you can do this. You can do this." So all beings, it's like all beings. And I was like, what is how? And then here it is, the universe It's 1 inch long. Where's their doubt? Where is their vow? Because it's not abstract. There's no belief, there's no vow. Beyond belief and vow. Seamless action in a long now. What did you think that peace would mean no challenges for me ever again? Do you think peace meant no heartache ever again? No heartache? Or maybe do we think that peace, a great peace, might be being expansive enough to encompass it all? And then also kind of like laugh at it too, maybe. Like, how is this my life? Am I stuck on the C train with? So I wrote a little poem. Because that's what I do. I write stupid little poems. But I also needed a way to end the talk. So I wrote a poem. What does it sound like? It sounds like Zazen. It's a vast sky, no obstruction, no doubt. Just off the 100-foot pole and onto the train. Just take the worm and inch your way home. Well, I see my interpreter on the screen. So that means you can ask questions. Then I understand them. And so, if anybody has any questions, I think we have a little time or comments. Yes, please. And if you could speak loudly so that they can hear you online.
I know what I should do. But I just feel like I feel it's so hard and I don't feel safe. And I like tell myself that this is what you should do because you know what you should do. But I also feel like so much unsafe. And I feel like doing this is so dangerous. Doing this will like will make you lose a lot of things, will make your future more, even more worse than now. So even I try, even I do what I should do, I still don't feel safe. And I know if this is what I will choose, I will lose a lot of things. I still need to do that. And I just feel this is so hard. Because in the past, what I persuade myself is there is a way for you to feel more comfortable. And you, what you need to do is just to find that path, is to find that way. But now it's very hard for me to persuade myself there is a way for you to feel comfortable. But I'm afraid I need to tell you every way is not comfortable. So I don't know how to live with this. I really don't know how to live with this. I don't know what is the hope now. Is it a hope?
Yeah. You know, it's something a little related, but maybe a little different for me. Is like sometimes I feel like a sense of injustice in my life. You know, I'm being taken advantage of, or something's not going well. And, you know, so sometimes for me, I just say, who's this one that they're taking advantage of? You know, who's this person that I'm pushing forward all the time, this concept of a person that's being injured all the time or being taken advantage of or something? Because half the time I'm in these situations and it's like, it's actually okay. I can still have skin in the game. I could still feel involved. I can still feel connected, but not take things like as personally. And it's a hard balance to find that. And I take comfort in like the words of Suzuki Roshi when he said, just shine one corner. Just shine one corner. You know, it's like the same with these vows. Like, how do I do that? If I save the worm, I'm not doing this. if I show up over here, I'm dropping that. It's okay. We can't fix everything. We can't solve everything. We can't take care of the whole world. Just sometimes it's enough just to shine one corner. It's just to do your little work. You know? And I have multiple disabilities, and sometimes I am laid out. You know, I can't function. I can't get out. And, you know, as a person who's been a Zen monk for a decade and a half and been a disability advocate for even longer, you would think I'd be him. You know, you'd think I would be savvy to my own story. There I am lying in bed thinking, man, I'm kind of worthless. But, you know, and then I'll have a thought like, well, maybe my job today is just to heat up an ice pack. And that's my job. It's just to take care of myself. And if I don't view myself as really separate from anybody, then taking care of myself is taking care of the world. So finding that peace and finding that balance, to me, sometimes it's just shining that one corner, even if it's just me, it's just taking care of me and taking care of my little heart and, you know, our little apartment, just cleaning the little dishes, heating up an ice pack. That might be it. That might be how I save all sentient beings. It might be like that. And don't worry about where the path goes like that. One of my old teachers says the path is on the top of your head. And we're constantly like looking around for it. Like, yeah, it's just got to be here somewhere. I just had it. You know? But it's true. It's true. And trust your heart and take that step off. And take it. The road will appear. It'll meet your feet. It'll come. Okay? Any other questions? They don't have to be as good as that one. Yes, Julia.
I have a follow-up, which is, really, will the road come up?
It has so far, hasn't it? I know there's been, let's call them spiritually significant moments in our lives, you know, things, times that suck. And they still suck sometimes for a long time afterwards. But you know, there's a kind of a threshold when you go far enough away from it and you look back and go, yeah, that was a crazy time, wasn't it? When we broke down by the side of the road and it was raining and it was tough, right? And then we look back and we go, oh, that was kind of crazy. It's kind of great. I got a really good poem out of that one. Well, you know, when I see that sometimes those moments are really spiritually significant. So we kind of say, you know, I don't want to trade them out. I'll take them. You know, I'll be on the hook for my karma and a little bit extra. I'll work on it. I'll help. I'll do it. I'll show up. And when we do that, I just like, we make the step. Yeah. And kind of meets us, you know. Until it does it, you know, it's okay. Until it doesn't. Yes, hi.
My question is about decision making in light of this.
If you might just speak, I'll put it off.
My question is about decision making in light of this idea that what if, say, you have an option and you can step off the pole in this direction or you can step off the pole in that direction and there's a choice to be made?
Yeah. There's a choice to make. I mean, I can't solve that for you.
But advice.
but a little more than what you're giving me.
Also. Story.
A story. An anecdote. Something from Reader's Digest, perhaps. Yeah, you know, finding out on my kind of personal metric is a little bit dangerous. I think asking me what helps me make some little decisions, then there's no equal thing. And if I take this one path or do this one thing, I'm giving up this other thing. So when we step away from the details of decisions and we step away from that, this kind of idea that there's a right way or there's a right path, then we're freed up. Because as what Dogen said, it's an open hand that actually contains everything. So you've got all the options and all the possibilities, but I'm not stuck on anything. I'm not resting in those things. I'm not caught up in those things. And it tends to be the kind of right thing presents itself. Or my own twisted metric, if it's like A and B truly are opposite or truly are equal, A and B, I'll pick the one that makes a better story. You know, I don't know. It's just like feeling free to be like that in my life is my point. Not the decisions, not the clarity of that kind of moment, but just like, how am I oriented towards these hardships? How am I thinking about the situations in my life? I had I'm always also a psychotherapist, and I had a supervisor who would, very early on in my training, and she would say, like, you know, how did we mess up today? You know, she'd just get really enthusiastic about our mistakes. And I was just like, oh, this is interesting. You know, I grew up with a very different kind of relationship to this. And now that I'm saying this aloud, I realize how that got in the way of my learning, or got in the way of my intimacy with the moment, right? So I was like, oh, interesting. So maybe picking the wrong choice is really great, because I'm free to do that. I'm free to do that. I'm free to experience my life fully. You know, my soul hath elbow room. You know, it's like, I'm free to be fully inhabited in my life, so I can make mistakes. And it feels much more rich and alive that way for me. And there's more sorrow, but there's sometimes a lot more joy too when it's like that. So I'm okay with that. Yeah. I think. Ask for me tomorrow. Yes, please.
Yeah, so, yeah, I hear a very interesting idea from your talk today. Is that, like, you mentioned something about belief, and you mentioned that, like, belief usually comes from, if you don't understand, the more you understand something, the less you hold the belief toward it. So, You know, I think this idea is quite interesting to me because I wonder, like, how does the practice of Zen or meditation, how should we still hold beliefs toward life, toward other people, toward the society, toward the humanity? Because originally I thought belief maybe that's a really powerful strength that makes people to make decisions, even when there is not enough clues or evidence. But now I feel, that kind of really got me interested. So I want to hear about how you reconcile those things, and also you still think we should hold beliefs, or on the worst certain sense, is belief a possession.
So is your question maybe about if we kind of take away some of those things, what's left? What can drive us, and what can help us to kind of show up? And I also think that it's kind of the opposite too, because when I've got a lot of stuff and I've got a lot of belief, I have a lot of story, that kind of is getting in the way of me being connected to this moment and to the work I'm supposed to do. What does belief have to do with any of it? Because belief is usually couched in, rooted in story. Just like a big idea that I have that I want to keep it going. And I realized how much of my life energy was spent into that. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. So for me, the first thing I kind of started laughing at myself a lot more. I would take myself very seriously, sometimes. I didn't realize it, but that was at the heart of some of my personal issues. And it's at the heart of all of yours too, maybe. But it was really driving a lot of this functioning. And when that wasn't there's actually more of me in the moment, And it's this constantly flowing. The Chinese masters would say it's it's a ball on swift moving water. It's just like our life is just like, wow, it's just coursing along and everything's happening. And we're always going, but wait, but what about? And it's like passing us, as we do that. So, just for me, giving myself that room and kind of laughing at myself, it was helpful, and helped get me kind of off being stuck on that story track. And then I just, think our practice, because, when we sit, it's like, sometimes it's like a movie theater. It's all being projected onto this wall that we're staring at, all these stories and stuff. And you're just like, yeah, and I was right and she was wrong. And and eventually, if you just keep sitting, you'll probably let go of it. You probably get really tired of it. You just kind of go, okay, this is boring. I don't need to do this all the time. And then, somebody says, oh, you're a big fat idiot. And I say, yeah, and I stink too. Yeah. I don't have to take it that personal. I can just be that ball on swift moving water. Just this continuous moment that's just like inching along. I'm just like, and it's okay. It's okay. And I mess up all of the time. I make all of these mistakes here and other areas of my life, and it's okay. I'm also human, and it's okay to be human and have doubts and fears and make mistakes and get caught. And then, it's a little easier when I don't do this to myself. I'll go over here. And it just it kind of frees me up. Did that answer your question, Rafael?
To some extent,
I think there's something there for you. Good. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
think it's lunch.
I think it's time for lunch. Yes, let's.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.